Welcome to the Business Trendsetter Podcast, where we talk about trends and how to grow your business. My name is Manny Turan.
And I'm Adam Hartung.
We are Spark Partners. We're here to help you grow your business by truly understanding trends, what they are, how they actually will affect your business, and then ultimately applying some principles we talk about in your business in order to capitalize on those trends. So, Adam, have you ever called a customer service phone number and had that tree for sales press one, for sales press two, and so forth?
Actually, yes, and I think everybody has, and it almost always is irritating and aggravating.
Very true. And then have you most recently called some customer service and you'll hear a voice that sounds maybe very much like mine asking in plain English, please ask me your question?
No, I haven't had that experience in a long time. It seems like it's either I get a tree that leads me to nowhere or I end up talking to somebody who clearly speaks English as a second language and I have a lot of trouble understanding what they're trying to say through a thick accent.
Well, the other day, this has actually happened to me a few times. I made a phone call to, I think it was my investment, I think it might have been E-Trade or something. And it was one of these things that says, hello, my name is Alex. You can ask me anything you want in plain English. And you can say, well, I'm having trouble setting up my brokerage account, for instance. And it could decipher based on what you're saying, what the problem is and direct you to the right place. Now, when these first started, they were kind of rough, but now as time's progressed, they're becoming more and more user-friendly and efficient. So this is just an example of one thing we talked about last podcast, which is artificial intelligence. It's everywhere. We live it. We breathe it. But we may not know that it's here. And so I know that we talked about some other examples. So let's hear from you, Adam. What examples do you see where AI exists today or where it can be applied?
Well, you know, before we dive into this, one thing I want to make sure I point out to all of our listeners, we self-published a book, an ebook back at the end of 2019, about the future based upon the pandemic. And in it, we called Thrive to the Future. And we said that disruptions are normal and that people who will succeed coming out of the pandemic are people that will build their business around four trends. And we said these four trends are driving, you know, the movement of successful companies. And those trends were mobility, the gig economy, working asynchronously, and the fourth one was artificial intelligence. So way back then, we were very clear that artificial intelligence was just a very, very important trend that people should be paying attention to and building on. But I think what happened over the last couple of 3 years was it was easy for people to understand the gig economy. They look at an Uber driver, they look at somebody doing web pages or doing graphics, and they say, okay, I get the gig economy. Asynchronous behavior, okay, I understand sending a job off on email, getting it back, you know, some of the time reviewing it, applications like Slack and understanding how we can integrate with social media. So that was another one that was easy to understand. Mobility, hey, everybody's got a cell phone. Everybody realizes they're working on the road. So they were kind of quick on that. But what I was struck by this last couple of weeks is that people don't quite understand artificial intelligence. And even though we've talked about it a few times, including last week, I come to realize that people don't really understand. And it takes me back to back in the around the, you know, the 2001 to 2008 timeframe when I would be talking to people about building on trends. And I did an awful lot of talks to manufacturing groups at that time, you know, bread and butter businesses out there, retailers as well. And I would say, hey, how many people have a mobile phone? And, you know, people would hold up. At that time, it was predominantly a BlackBerry. And they would hold up their BlackBerry phone, you know, and they would talk about it. And later on, it became an iPhone. But I would say, hey, do you use that? Sure, we all use it. And I say, well, can you show me what your company looks like on your mobile phone? And they would look at me and they would go, well, what? You know, I'm not on the mobile phone. I said, well, do you have a website? And a lot of people were still at that time just had rudimentary websites in like 2004. And I'd be saying, look, you know, if I'm at lunch and I recommend your company to somebody, the first place they're going to do is go to their phone and look you up and see what you look like and find out what kind of business you're in and what, you know, how to contact you. But it struck me at that time that even though the internet was well known and even though people were familiar with websites, they were using their phones for basically three things: making a phone call, doing texting, and email. That was really what they were using their phone for primarily. And I was sitting there saying, look, you have a new piece of technology in your hands. Use that to better connect with your customers. But it, you know, it took well over past 2010 before we got everybody to the point where now we all know that you have to have it. And it kind of reminds me that that's where artificial intelligence is. Heck, we've had, you know, Alexa talking to us through Echo and Dot phones from Amazon for what, 7-8 years now, right? We've had Siri talking to us on our phone, helping us find directions, places, looking things up for us on the internet. We've had that for what, 8-9 years? And those are examples of artificial intelligence, right? And that's what you were talking about when you called into customer service and they asked you a few questions, listened to what you had to say. That was an example of artificial intelligence. And so it strikes me that there are a tremendous number of people who listen to us and people that I interact with and you interact with, that we talk about artificial intelligence and they act like it's something very futuristic, you know, that it's something way off in the future and doesn't have anything to do with small business or medium-sized business, and they don't need to worry about it. And the reality is that it's been around and been used for 10 years. It's part of everyday life today. Artificial intelligence is everywhere that we look. It's a simple example. One of the reasons Amazon is Amazon, and it is so powerful, is how much we enjoy buying from Amazon. You go to the website, and it remembers what you bought in the past. If you look for something new, it will recommend alternative products. If you look to buy something, it has the what goes with sort of thinking. They will say, well, if you're buying this, you probably ought to take a look at this other thing, you know, because you might need that as well. That's artificial intelligence.
Yep,
that's
totally.
Basically this, all the same thing. And yet many of us aren't thinking about that in the context of our own business. So, you know, we can think about the big applications, right? So what does artificial do? First of all, let's kind of think about the name. Let's call it generative artificial intelligence. It helps to make that because what you're looking for is for the AI to generate something for the public. So ChatGPT that we demonstrated last week live. Okay. On the podcast is generative because you could ask it a question and it would give you an answer, right? So that's generative AI. So that helps, I think, people to understand that what you want is the artificial intelligence to generate something for you, for your customer. What is artificial intelligence doing? It's saying, okay, let's look at a large data set and let's see if we could come up with an answer to that. And the more data we can look at, the quicker or the stronger our response. So if we think about how many times we ask Google a question. Now, in the early days, if you wanted to get a good answer, you had to be what we called a good Googler, meaning you had to be good at knowing how to put in keywords that would get to the right sort of an answer without extraneous words that would send Google off in the wrong direction. Well, 20 years later, Google is a much smarter form of artificial intelligence. It's better capable of sorting out what our keywords are, ignoring extraneous words, and helping us figure out what it is we want to know. So let's think about, these are what in research we call longitudinal problems, meaning there's a lot of data and how do I look across all of it? So all of us, when we were in school, some teacher would task us, write a report on Abraham Lincoln or something, right? And the first thing you have to do is go to the library. Now, today you'd go to the internet on library, then you would look longitudinally at a lot of data and you figure out how to put it together into whatever interesting answer you needed. The people who got A's were people who were the best at doing the longitudinal research. They'd reach further out, find more resources, find maybe a few more obscure resources other people hadn't found, and then say, hey, what was the impact of all this as I bring it together into one decision-making model? So writing a report, which is what ChatGPT does, is what we were taught to do in school, and it was longitudinal analysis. And that's what most of this generative AI is. So let's think about a simple one. Medical doctors today, to be a general practice, I don't even know if that term general practice still exists anymore. They probably, you know, you have family physicians, everything. Yeah, so different than it was. But if I'm just sick, and I don't really know what I'm sick, and I want to go get diagnosed, then I think I want to go to a physician. And often we get frustrated because physician A will say, well, I got this far, I want you to go to physician B. And then he'll say, well, I got this far, I want you to go to physician C. And what's happening is they're saying, well, my data set has a certain width, and I can diagnose you down to this level of the problem. But that's not good enough. So you need to go to somebody else who's got a better data set. So where I have a thin data set, they've got a big data set. They can listen to you and they can get you closer to the problem. And then that person might say, well, I still don't think I've got it nailed. So I need you to go to a third person who's got a different data set. Well, so that's where artificial intelligence is superb. You can say to artificial intelligence, well, here's a set of symptoms that could come back with that second order round of questions. And you could answer those questions and you come back with a third order round of questions. So you could actually, you know, diagnostics would be very, very good. And again, we see this today in our automobile. You go take, you know, in old days, I used to stand in front of a car scratching my head with everybody else listening to the engine and trying to say, is it the distributor? Is it a spark plug? You know, you kind of work your way through it, have a bunch of conversations about the possible problems before you tackled it. Today, you go plug a tool into a socket and it starts to listen to all the things happening in a car. And it's doing an analysis of all the incoming data to recommend what the most likely problem is, right? Yeah. That's artificial intelligence right there in that box. It is something that is evaluating a whole bunch of data points and saying, oh, the most likely problem here is a sensor or, you know, a failure of this type of a product. So anytime that you're out there and you say, hey, look, I've got people asking me questions and it takes a lot of data to get to the right answer, this is a great application of artificial intelligence. If you have an organization that has embedded intelligence, meaning you got some employees that are really, really smart and they really know their way around something, the more you can go get that information out of them and make that into a database, that's where you can then start to use that to search as artificial intelligence. When we start to combine the data with behavior, then we get the generative AI. So if you think about ChatGPT, it's got a really big, large set of data around words and understands words. Then what happens is we start saying, well, what's behavior? Well, writing style, iambic pentameter. That's a writing style, okay? You start teaching what iambic pentameter means, other writing styles. Now you build that in. That's a behavior. That's an approach. That's a form of use of the language. So that's a behavior. So as we take the data and we apply behavior to it, it becomes generative. And now what happens is we can almost feel like we're interacting with a human because we've combined the data with the behavior. So there's a lot of places in our businesses where, you know, we can start to think about how we could apply that.
Let's see some examples. What do you got?
Well, I think your biggest one is customer service. When somebody calls in and they've got a customer service problem, the first thing is to try to figure out, well, what's your problem, right? And so when you put them into one of those decision trees of who you want to talk to, you're just going to irritate them because it's like, okay, I got a problem and I don't know if I want A or B or C, but I got to fight my way through all that. It takes time. But if you have a smart a generative AI machine that takes the call, like you had recently with your experience, what happens is somebody can say, I'm having trouble getting my car to start. I'm having trouble getting your website to work. It's something like that, right? On those lines. And it can start saying, okay, you know what? Then start asking you intelligent questions. Well, where are you on the website? Or what is it you're trying to, transaction you're trying to conduct? You know, and so you start answering a few questions and it peels back the data and it starts to say, well, it sounds like that you have this problem. Have you tried rebooting your browser? Or what browser are you using? You're using Firefox. Have you tried doing this on Chrome to see if you get a different response? Right. And now it's very intelligent and it's being very helpful because it's using the data combined with behavior. So customer service, which is a notoriously horribly applied because we think it's all expense and doesn't do us any good. So we've outsourced it to people in foreign countries who can't speak well. We've tried using decision trees, which frustrate customers. Is one of the, I can't think of a better place to start. How can you satisfy your customer with automating something? Now, again, I think the second part you look at this is where do I have a lot of people in my organization? You and I have talked at length about the problem of demographics. There's just not enough people. If you're solving problems by pushing people onto the problem, I would start saying, what are those people doing? And could I turn that into an artificial intelligence answer? Because then I would free those people up to do something else. So in a world with a shortage of people, what we're trying to say is where, you know, look for our customer pain points, like customer service, look for where we're throwing people at the problem, like customer service. And that's a great place to say, well, that's a good, where I could start using artificial intelligence.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people have a difficult time knowing where to start, even with this whole AI framework. But going back to what you said earlier around the advent of the phones and the iPhones and all that. I mean, there was a time when we didn't know how to use an iPhone, you or I, right?
Right.
Now we're pretty good at using them. So I think the first thing you do is just go and Google it. Go to YouTube. listen to the news. There's consultants that are good at this sort of thing. And I just think about all the different industries that we'll have in the future. Well, even now have the ability to use AI. Just think about the entertainment industry. Think about marketing and writing ad copy. That's what GPT is like, that in particular is really good at. You mentioned the diagnosing of a car or of a person, like a WebMD, where the chatbot will ask you questions. And if you put that next to, I don't know if you've done much exploration into the idea of deep fake.
Yeah.
So you can have a person that's interacting with you on the video that looks like a real person, that talks like a real person. And I mean, the implications are scary, but very exciting.
You know, a weird one of these that came up recently is gambling, in the situation that you go to a casino and today you have blackjack dealers and you have roulette spinners and you have craps, people who run the craps table. All of that can be replaced with artificial intelligence. In other words, you could be sitting at a game where the it's not a real human dealing the cards; it's being dealt by the game itself. You could have craps where it's done the same way. And I've certainly seen roulette wheels where it's all automated. What we're doing there is we're taking the human that is a short supply in the job in the service industry, and we're replacing that human now with a piece of artificial intelligence. And so that any time that we can do that, it has a great opportunity of reducing frustration and improving our business while lowering costs, right? And so just kind of think about anytime you have people in a job doing a repetitive task, that's just another place to apply artificial intelligence, right? How could we get, if it's something they'd say, oh, I could do this in my sleep, then probably you could replace it with some form of artificial intelligence, right? And that's why we need to, but we don't spend enough time at it. Again, what I'd say is our small to mid-sized companies, and even sometimes in large companies, I know I've recently had a lot of trouble with bank credit cards. We're trying to get help. It's just really, really difficult. And it's because they're not sitting there saying, well, what's my customer's pain point? And where does that pain point run into a computer or a problem or a person? And then how could I try to solve that? And again, getting the best problem solvers that you have together and say, what do you do to solve customer problems? Like, just take, for example, something as simple as, your electric utility and the power goes out, right? If your power goes out at your house, you're completely lost. You have no idea why. Was it a storm? Is a line down? What is it, right? And just knowing, okay, this is what the problem is, makes a lot of difference to us. Then the second thing, which is an estimate of the repair time, makes a lot of difference. We know we're not going to go fix the problem. But we know. But if we don't know why there's a problem or how long it's going to take, we become angry. So you sit there and say, well, could I solve that problem? Now take that and say that you're an auto repair shop. And you could say, okay, let's diagnose your problem, and then we'll tell you how long it's going to take to fix it and the cost, right? Then to some extent, the little boxes they plug in do that for them, right? But you could even get better doing remote diagnostics. You could say to somebody, hey, could you go out to your car and do this, do that? We can do a remote diagnostic, and we tell you likely what the problem is, how long it will take, how much it will cost, before the person ever even shows up at the shop. Now, if you're doing that for somebody, you're probably going to get a lot more business, because if somebody does this remote diagnostic with me in my driveway and I spent 15 minutes at it, I know that that's less time than it would take me to even drive to a repair shop, and then the time I would spend getting it checked out, wasting my time, et cetera. So these are common everyday problems that for which the tools exist. And I think that's the part that people don't understand, is that what ChatGPT is showing us is that there are tools out there now to do this. So just like, we at one point didn't know how to write code for mainframe computers. We didn't know how to write code on a PC. We didn't know how to write code for the internet. All these things, the code's there and now there's people doing it. There's code out there for how to build these generative AI models, because they're effective. It's not, what they do isn't that hard. The brilliance of AI is, do you have the large enough data set? And then have you figured out the behavioral problem, right? You merge them together. And there's some good rules for this. So like, for example, one of the good rules would be tie this to a customer where you can solve the problem. Like definitely don't boil the ocean. And one good example I have for this is Waze, W-A-Z-E. Have you ever used that app on your phone?
Every single week. Oh, okay. I go to Phoenix. I've been using it for years.
Okay. I was a very, very early adopter of Waze some 14 years ago. And when I first used it, I wrote a little article about it for Forbes magazine. And for our customers that don't know, what Waze is like a navigation tool. But where it's different is it doesn't just tell you how to get from A to B. It's got dynamic information telling you the quickest route. Are there policemen along the route? Are there accidents? It's just dynamic information on it too. Well, when I first wrote it up, I mean, the potential was enormous. And I said, you know, we'll have to see what happens.
Yeah.
And it just didn't do much. I was living in Chicago at the time, and I just discovered that it wasn't very valuable. Now I started, about a year ago, started realizing there were lots and lots of people using Waze, and I wasn't using it, even though I'd had it on my phone for 10 years. Over 10 years. And then I started doing a little research. And what I discovered was that the people who wrote the application were actually living in Israel. And when they wrote it, they first put it out to the market and let people use it. Well, the thing is, to make it valuable, you have to have lots of users. So mm-hmm. that, you know, lots of users that you're tracking tell you the traffic patterns. The users can tell you where they saw a police car, where they saw an accident, right? The more users on the application, the more valuable it is, which then programs the algorithm to be more successful. So what they did was they started realizing, hey, instead of having everybody use this, let's focus on cities in Israel. And so they focused there, got information, got a lot of people to use it. And that's how they wrote the first set of algorithms. And then they figured out how to take that first set of algorithms, improve them, and go to other cities. So there's a base algorithm that's used in Chicago, Tucson and Phoenix, San Francisco, all that. And there's a base algorithm for all those. But then those are fine-tuned for each market based upon the number of users. So I'm using this as an example, but don't boil the ocean, because what I want our users to understand was when they were building this very smart application, Waze is an artificial intelligence application, because it is not only saying how to get from A to B, it's telling you which is the quickest route, which is the shortest in miles, and which would, and real time things like obstacles could be in the roadway, you know, the traffic cops and all that sort of stuff. So it's a smart set of directions for you. But the number of users, the data was very, very important. Do I have enough data? So if you like, for example, maybe you segment down your customers and say, what are the biggest problem that my largest customers have? Mm-hmm. And what are the customers that produce half your revenue or maybe 40 to 60% of your revenue, and say, what is their biggest problem? And get focused on solving the problem for that handful of customers first, instead of all customers, right? So narrowing the problem down so that you get the best data you can for them, and then combining the behavior,
right,
what is it that they're trying to solve, and getting at that by asking the people in your company, what do you do for our biggest customer when she calls? What is her typical problem? You know, when Jennifer calls us on the phone, one of our biggest customers, what do you think her likely going to ask you to do? You know, and you start finding out there's all these norms, that this is what most frequently Jennifer asks about. And then this is most frequently what we have to do. Okay, now you can replicate that into a program that can start saying, well, let's start to solve Jennifer's problem. And if you could, then you probably get smart enough to start predicting when Jennifer's going to have a problem. Well, this is happening on our side. And so every time we get backed up here, or every time we have this problem, that ends up with Jennifer having a problem. So now we can alert Jennifer in advance. And we can say, Jennifer, we realize that, you know, this is happening. And I just wanted you to be aware that tomorrow or the next day, or your order may be delayed one day because of this, or, you know, we start being proactive. And that's using artificial intelligence to help us be able to contact and connect up with Jennifer far more effectively. And then another good example of this is code generation. If you're writing code in your company, you know, we write a lot of repetitive code, and there's a lot of code written in company A that's gone all the way through triple Z, right? The same code repeated. So using algorithms to write code greatly improves your efficiency. Yeah. So that's just an application inside your company that you could use. The second thing I want you to think about is what is it your customer really has value for? And how could I try to use artificial intelligence to get me from here to there? And my answer for that is a company called Smart Data Solutions out of suburban Minneapolis. I believe they're in Eden Prairie. And they had a mailroom, and they were opening thousands and thousands of envelopes for their customers. That was a mundane task that had very low value, and they, you know, struggled to make a profit at it because it was a lot of people could set up a mailroom, cut these things open, scan the documents. It was really brutal, low pay, hard to manage. What they started saying was, what does our customer do with the data? And the more they asked their customers what they did with the data, they started saying, well, why don't we put data into databases? And then what is the decision-making process? What's the problem you're looking for? And then how would you approach that problem? And as they started to ferret out how customers use the data, they realized that they could, at the very point of data entry, start to be much more, tag the data in a way that would make it far more effective in the workflow. So the workflow itself would need a lot less human intervention. And after just a few years of working with their customers, really what they were doing, they still were opening a lot of envelopes, but customers loved them because of how they were able to make the data much more effective, much more usable, and the decision-making at the customer was much easier. So by adding a handful of programmers to apply intelligence to the data they were collecting, they were able to start to treat their customers in a much better way. And their customers were thrilled. The customers were kind of like, you know, opening envelopes didn't do much for me. But when you figured out how to help me make better decisions with the data, that does do a lot for me. And so I'm always trying to tell people, what is it your customers really want? You know, they may say, well, I want you to open my envelopes. But we'll start asking better questions, you know. But how... Well, after we give you the data, what do you do with it? Is it going in a database? Well, should we put it in the database? Do you make decisions? What kind of decisions? Could we try to, you know, codify those decisions, you know, in a machine learning context and then help write algorithms so that we can make that go better for you? So that's all, it's what Amazon's doing. Amazon just watches how people buy stuff and then turns it into, well, you're most likely going to want to buy this other thing.
I think that in the sales stack, in the sales process, one of the things that a lot of really good salespeople do is they ask a question that's directed at really getting to the root problem, and then they shut up.
Yeah.
Because I've seen salespeople in the past just couldn't stop talking. I mean, they're just yapping. And I think this goes back to your idea of what is your customer really trying to gain from your interaction with them, and then start to dig deeper beyond that. You had said also a couple of other examples during our meeting earlier regarding maybe some financial modeling that AI could do. Maybe there's other implications in the finance world, banking for sure. Where else do you think AI could pop up?
Well, I think it can predict your customers' problems, because you can start saying, where do my customers have a problem, right? So it can understand where they're getting the most value by modeling your customers' interactions with you. Let's take a look at your customer's business and how we could help that business be better, right? So any kind of place where we could model some behavior. Now, another great place for this is just any trend. So we could take a trend like, you know, the gig economy, and we could start to model up how the gig economy would affect our business. You know, what would happen if we, instead of having our own internal accountants, we went to an external accountant. If we had whatever functionality we have it internally, we go to the gig economy to use it. Artificial intelligence can go a long way in terms of helping us understand how that would work. It also can do a really good job of helping us set that person up to succeed. So if we say, okay, what do we do internally? We take data and we make this change to it. Once we understand that and we get real clear about it, we could say, oh, if we're going to go to the gig economy, here's the data and here's what we want to have happen to it.
Yeah.
Now, along the way, you may find out you don't need the gig person because you can get the AI tool to do it for you, right? So that occurs to any functionality. Are you doing risk assessment? Are you doing customer acquisition? You know, if somebody gives you a list of 10,000 names and phone numbers, that's not very valuable. So what you really want to try to do is, could I send an AI tool off with these names and phone numbers to find out who these people are, and then try to get more intelligent about which ones I really want to spend my time trying to pursue? You know, looking for good leads. AI is great at sifting through, you know, thousands and thousands of data points. And you say, well, I'm looking for the person out there that has this problem, and you can describe the problem. Then they could probably try to search their way down through that and see if they could narrow 10,000 names down to, say, 200 or 300 that would make it a much more feasible opportunity set to try to pursue. So lead generation, sales, full funnel management, selecting among vendors. You could use artificial intelligence to help you understand the risk of, say, a person that's has a factory in the Philippines and they're offering you a price versus somebody that has a factory in Texas that offers you a price versus somebody that has a factory in your same state and offers you a price. And you could put the different factors in, you know, location, price, delivery time, sourcing, raw materials, locations, et cetera. And then that can help, the AI can help you to say, well, what, you know, which one of these is more risky? And what's the financial risk that I take if I go with the riskier one? And, you know, I think oftentimes we're terrible at doing that sort of risk analysis ourselves as people. We don't, we're just terrible at it. You know, we get very little training in how to do it. And we have, and very few of us have the mathematical skills, honestly, to try to set up the sets and try to do the algebra. We, you know, by the time we get out of college, we're either mathematicians or we've forgotten a lot of it. Right. And so they just don't know how to do it.
Well, there's just, this is a bit of the Wild West. There's a gold rush happening right now with this whole world of AI that's already here, but really to go to that next level. It's everywhere and the opportunities are boundless. Much like the internet was a, took everything to that next level. I think that AI will take everything even to a higher level. Just think about human semantic Google, where it would understand little nuances and really help you to find what you're looking for, rather than just sift through pages of stuff and identify. I mean, again, it's boundless. So I would say, Adam, this has been a great conversation. What are your last thoughts for our listeners regarding AI? And we will log off for the week.
There are going to be a lot of skeptics, but remember, there were skeptics that said that we would, you know, never use the internet. There are people that never thought Wikipedia would be a good source. There will be a lot of skeptics, and that's because it's easy to be a skeptic and say no. Saying no is the easiest thing. Keeps you from having to invest, keeps you from having to learn, keeps you from having to even try. So the Dr. No's of the world are just the people that just don't have the gumption to get out there and do it. Don't let the skeptics hold you back. The people that jumped early on to multiple ways that we use the internet and the network today, look how many of those became great, great businesses, right? Look what Amazon has been able to do over the last 20 years. And I would say that's because they're willing to try and test and do things to help their customers have a better experience. And I encourage all of us to think about that and realize that there's a lot of artificial intelligence out there. There's a lot of tools, and we should be looking to apply those today to get advantage so we can become, as you like to say, Manny, the next billion-dollar company.
Indeed. Well, say yes to AI, and Adam, we'll see you next week.
Thank you very much, Manny.
Cheers.